Good afternoon, Bass fans. Just every workshop starts like, well, we don't really know what we're gonna do, so.
What are we gonna do?
But we'll just introduce ourselves, or I'll introduce these guys that are here already. You all know Mike Barber. If you've been sitting here for a while, works with the Gibson brothers, Eric and Lee. He's from way up in Plattsburgh, New York, and he's also a keen fisherman. He was just talking about all of his favorite trout holes back here. And a guy from probably as far south as you could go from there works with one of my favorite bands of all time, and he has a kind of a bluegrass background, but he plays with the Red Stick Ramblers, and this is Eric Fry.
Howdy.
And Eric is, I think, originally from Alabama, is that right?
Yes, sir.
My favorite story about him is that they met him at a bluegrass festival, I guess, and you can correct me where I'm wrong on all this, but at that festival, Lindsay, the fiddle player, killed a rattlesnake backstage, cooked it, and ate it.
It's true.
Which is like a, I think it's like a Louisiana badge of honor when you kill something and you conquer it and then you eat it. And, that's what you do down there. It's just like chicken.
Just like alligator.
Just throwing a little rice, a little hot sauce. And my name is Mike Bubb, and I'm just here for the day, and nice to see everybody. And I don't really know where to start. Maybe we just talk about these basses and these instruments a little bit. Missy's probably on her way here, and we'll get all of our stuff out of the way, and then we'll just sort of get real quiet and let her do everything when she gets here. So, because she is a reigning champ of the bass this year, so... Does anybody have any questions before we even start that they'd like to know something? Yes, sir.
Mike, what's that microphone arrangement on the side of your face?
That's exactly what it is, a microphone arrangement. a guy that used to work on my bass made this, and basically it's all hardware store parts. And it's just a clamp that holds the microphone on my instrument so I can move around with it instead of being sort of having to have a stand where I can't get away from it. And one of the things about the microphone technique is that these microphones, typically, like this type of microphone, you have to speak right into it. You got to point your voice right at it because it's very, what they call, directional. So if you start to turn it this way, you start to lose. And a lot of people put their microphone down in the tailpiece, and it starts to sound like that, and they have to turn it up real loud so that they can make it sound like this. But it won't sound like that because as you get around to the sides of it, you lose all of the bottom and the middle of the sound, so it gets real thin. And when you turn it up real loud and the microphone's pointed upside down, like up and down, and the bass sound's going this way, it doesn't get any of the deep tone of the bass. So a microphone has what they call proximity effect, and when you get closer to it, you get more of the low end, or you get a broader frequency range. So in pointing the microphone right where the air comes out of the bass, I'm distorting speakers already. It's great. Is that me or is that you? It's me. You know what it is? It's a 57. Here's another little thing you need to know. The 58s, what they use for vocal mics, have a better tight capsule on in this little mesh screen here. And the 57s, they have a little plastic cap that's held on by a little wire thing in there that makes it rattle. When you put it on a bass, you get that in the overdrive. So that's what you're hearing. So Reed, hell, I learned it just now. So anyway, that's the story. It's just a rod of threaded stock and some little L-shaped things I made into a clamp. Thank you. And it just clamps onto the bass, and it's expandable. And, you know, if I can't take my bass with me to certain gigs, I take my little clamp with me, so at least my sound's kind of consistent, and it always helps with my sound. So I've used it for a long time, and it really works great. And you could get any kind of microphone on there just about because it's a universal clip. But that's the story on that. And let's make welcome. Late, but always on time. from Nashville, Tennessee. Missy Raines right here, folks. So just talking about these basses predominantly, you know, the majority up here is a K bass. These K basses are just old plywood basses that typically you found in a lot of schools around the country, and also a lot of the big bands and were traveled with them because they're made out of laminated wood, which is like plywood. So they're, you know, fairly resistant to a lot of temperature change and humidity change. They can't affect them, but they hold up a lot better than, say, a delicate carved instrument. So they're perfect for bluegrass because you can go right out there and just jam away. You don't have to worry about anything and scratch it up. And just when it starts falling apart, glue it back together. It'll just hold right up. But these three basses, well, except for Eric's, is a little different, but Mike's and Missy's and mine are about the same, a little difference in age, but each of them are the same style where they have the fiddle points on them. It's an M-style K bass. And a lot of times the Ks have a nice thin neck on them too, which my theory was it was made for kids that were playing in school bands and stuff, and so they're really easy to play, or for smaller hands, they work well for that, so... Very durable instrument, very inexpensive, easy to find on eBay, and basically they're all made the same. They're made out of plywood, out of molds that made the shape of the instrument, so they're all the same. It's just that you can take any one of them and sort of customize the setup to suit any, you know, what you like, and you can make them all pretty much, they'll all sound a little different, but you can make it play and feel the same as if you wanted to have two or three of them. They're very consistent in the way that they're made, so... That's another nice thing about them. They're not like a, you know, made by artisans where everyone is just, each one is just a little different and it's construction and everything. These are basically all have the same components and the same pieces and the same design behind them. So they're very consistent instruments. And Eric, I don't know what you're playing there. That's a looks like a Roth.
It's called a Bianca. It's a Romanian bass. Hold on, let me get this thing higher. I got it in Austin, Texas at a little store called Violins, Etc. And there's a fellow that works there who's a great bass player named Mark Rubin. And he actually has, if anybody's interested in slap bass, he has a great video called The Ungentle Art of Slap Bass. And I would suggest getting that. It's him and another guy named
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, Kevin Smith. And anyway, he sold me this bass. And if you haven't met Mark, he's an incredible salesman. He can sell you anything in the world, which is kind of why I have this bass right now. I actually traded an old K for this one, so. But yeah, like Mike was saying, you can't beat an old K. That's what I grew up playing. My dad has a 56. What, yours is 54, is that right?
Uh-huh.
My dad has the exact same bass as Mike's, except his is about 2 years younger. So.
Yeah, I'd say Missy's probably the oldest. She's got a 30s. Old timer.
Yeah, I think it's either 37 or 38. It can't be determined, and it's one of the first ones. And it was probably like a little special deal because it's got things on it that there's been a few found. It's got real inlay, and then the carving on the brass thing, and the three piece neck, and but it's obviously been a little altered with the notes, and somebody. It actually came into my family this way. Somebody antiqued it, and this is—I mean, you know—I would love to take credit for this, but I didn't do it, and then I've just decided to keep it. But on the back, at one point, the lamination was really severely coming off when I first got the hold of the bass. So I had someone actually sort of repair it because it was just felt like it was going to be a problem. And when he did that repair, it sort of we uncovered this beautiful curly veneer that's what the bass actually looks like underneath the antiquing. And so I'm sure it's quite beautiful. But it looks like this.
That's instead. Why you don't want to take your instrument to a furniture repair guy.
Sure. Well, actually, that's a. I'm using a combination of a Fishman pickup and a, which is the Fishman Full Circle pickup, which is actually the silver rod here, right there. That's you take out if you have extensions on your bridge, you can just take out one of the extensions and put that pickup, and that's the actual pickup. And then it's tied into a crown mic and coming out with one signal, and then I just used the Fisherman Blender. I've been doing that for so long, using some combination of a mic and a pickup and through a Fisherman Blender. And I just really like the flexibility it gives me about how much of mic or how much pickup I use. In a perfect world, if I just had one thing to choose and I could only choose one, it would be a mic, and it would be something, you know, sort of more like what Mike's doing. But this works really well for me. And the only thing on this bass, if I'm playing up the neck, doing like quiet solo stuff, this bass, just by nature of being a laminated bass, is not going to ever have the sustain that a solid instrument's going to have. And so picking up with just a regular mic in a regular one-night stand gig, you know, there's a lot of nuance that can go that doesn't get picked up. Mainly not just because of the mic's problems, but because of the bass just doesn't have that sustain. So I found that with a pickup, it allows me to get out the softest things that I might be doing in the softest settings and still be able to get it out every night, not have to worry too much about having a really hot mic down here close to a monitor wedge that's going to create feedback. It's just because one day or somewhere I was making something rattle and buzz, and I either in the room or on the bass, and so I stuck that in there, and then I forget to take it out. Until somebody asks me, and then I forget to take it out. The bottom one, I remember that one. That was like a huge buzz that was going on one day. But, I don't know if you all find this, but every day is different. Even though the weather seems to be the same, one day my bass will feel like it's drenched and it sounds so wet and awful. And then the next day, it's a little drier sounding and things are rattling. And then the next day, something else is not, you know, it stops rattling. So it's just an ongoing thing. And that's just all there for looks.
I'll start. These are Tomastic Spiracore strings. That's what I use. They're a steel core string. The core of it looks like a little steel cable, and then it's wrapped with some other stuff, and it has a fine, flat winding on it. Unfortunately, bass strings are not, they're cost prohibitive for experimentation, so you can't just go buy a couple of different sets and try them out and see what you like. Usually you got to buy a set and go, well, I don't really like these, but I guess I got to play them for the next 2 years because I can't afford another set of something else. And, it always happens when you play somebody else's instrument. You go, wow, I wish mine sounded and played like this. And then, you go buy those strings, you put them on your bass, and they don't work, you know. So I've stuck with them for a long time. I've used a couple of different strings. I like the gut strings, really. I love the sound of gut strings, but for playing outside and trying to get volume, and for somebody like me that doesn't really play, I don't play through an amp much at all. So the gut strings, you tend to have to tune them a lot because they're very temperamental to not only how hard you play them, but to the weather and this and that. And you have to kind of maintain them because they're a fragile string. So I just landed on these Tomastic, and they're made over in Germany, which, you know, they're just made like a Mercedes. They're just a precision, well-made string, and they last forever. They hardly ever break. And, you just tune them once, and you're pretty much in tune for a show. They don't have to do a lot of touching up. They just really hang in there well. So I've kind of stuck with these down through the years. They have a big, fat, loud sound and very even, and I use a little mute on my bridge here, which is basically just it's a practice mute, or what they call a woof tone mute, which is sometimes your bass will create overtones, which sometimes, you know, that's like having the foam in your bridge or whatever. There's a little zing in there or something, so you can take it out with a little foam. But this kind of does the same thing. It'll even the strings out. If I take it off, you can kind of hear the bass has a little bit more of a hollow, I don't know. And then if I put it on, it makes it, it's not any quieter, it's just a more mellow sound and kind of evens the tone of the strings out. But it works well with the steel strings and also helps if you play through an amp a little bit. Because sometimes a bass, you ever notice a bass, if you play the bass, you'll have a string that's louder than you go, bump, bump, And basically, that's just from, you know, it's a fine tuning of the sound post, actually, to kind of get that balance. You can, and it takes time to knock it around, tune it back up, and see what you think, and then move it around to really get the sweet spot. So these have the most even sound for this instrument, and I've just kind of stuck with them down through the years. So Tomastic Spiracore Orchestra Gauge. You wouldn't believe this. I ordered some the other day. Now, I have an endorsement with these people, and I called them up, and I said, I need a set of strings. And she said, okay, that'd be $114. And I said, $114? I said, I thought I paid like $60 for them. And she said, well, you haven't bought any since 2004. And I said, well, wait, I was supposed to get like half off. And she goes, they list for $340. And I said, well... I said, I've never seen anybody selling these strings for that much. And I haven't. You can go on the internet and you find them for, you know, $160 or maybe dollars, maybe, something like that. So don't let the list price scare you. But anyway, other strings.
Well, I have a little ragtag team here. I've got three of them are obligatos, which I do not endorse at all. But Mike was saying...
You can't afford to get rid of them.
Exactly. Actually, this other one here was a string that came on this bass. I believe it's a D'Addario, just plain steel string, and I didn't like those either, but I like those better than the obligatos. And what happened was I bought these obligato strings, and within a month, maybe a little bit over a month, this D string started coming unraveled here at the bridge. And they also had a bad tendency to roll. They felt like nylon strings, and I like my strings a little bit higher tension. Actually, my favorite string is the Spiracore, and I haven't had a set in probably... 2 years or so. Helichords are a little bit cheaper, I believe, and they work too, but I think just for the money, the Spiracores are the best way to go.
I can get you a set.
I'll be talking to you later. Dominants are decent strings too. I like the dominants as well. I'm a fan of steel strings. I've never been able to play on nylon or gut strings and feel like I was in time. I was always rolling and playing too hard on them, so...
The dominant set is a rope, what they call rope core, so it's a little bit less, it doesn't have as much brightness. It's their sort of steel version of a synthetic gut string.
Right. So. But that's my story. If anyone here is from Obligato, I'd like to speak with you after the show.
I have Spiracore, Tomastic steel strings. Everything Mike said, I agree with 100%. I've been using them for years, and they're the best strings I've ever used.
Do you have an endorsement?
I'd like to talk to you about that. Didn't know that happened.
I've been using Tomastics forever. When I met Mike early on in the early 90s, he turned me on to Tomastic strings, and I liked them a lot. And I started listening to a lot of gut string players a lot, and I didn't. I tried to get away from the steel string sound. I don't use an amp. I microphone my strings, and Mike makes fun of me all the time. I put actually a microphone up here to get what a lot of sound people will call string noise.
But he uses two microphones, not just one microphone.
When you listen to a bass and you're sitting next to a bass, you're hearing string noise, and that's a lot of the nice sound that comes from a bass. And I'm not to contradict Eric, but I am using the obligato strings. And I do like the roll, because I think the way I play, when I play a string, I roll the string to snap to get a little of a... I'm trying to get more of a gut, like a percussive. It's a lower tension string. And not to contradict you either, Mike, but I broke a lot of Tomastics. I broke four now, yeah.
It happens. Things happen.
Well, no, I don't. I'm not saying.
You know, it's subjective and objective, yeah. and but mostly financial. You know, it's just,
I didn't.
That
come
will lead you down a path of
everybody
choices. So.
Yes.
Yeah. My basement blues. Well, we can play it. It's just a straight blues, kids. I'll play it through one time. I know Missy can. She can. I'll let her take a solo. But it's just a 12-bar blues. It's called the Basement Blues.